Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. What up, what up, what up? It's A-Wad. Here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. Team USA advances. They get their first knockout stage win since 2002, as this team has a chance to really achieve something that most people thought was impossible, achieve their goals, beat expectations, and put Team USA on the global map for soccer, because they deserve to be in the round of 16. They are one of the 16 best teams in this World Cup. That puts them ahead of Germany. That puts them ahead of Germany in the rankings. All right, Germany, you hear me? We beat Paraguay. You lost to Paraguay. We survived. You lost. We advanced. You're out. We're better than Germany in this World Cup. Better than Uruguay in this World Cup. But it is all about matchups. Matchups, matchups. And I did not want to match up against Belgium. They are a top 10 team in the globe. They have had their success in the past. Their best run was probably in 2014 or I think 2018 when they had their golden generation of players. Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku. They still have two of the three in Kevin De Bruyne and Romelu Lukaku, but it's not the same Belgian squad at all that defeated Team USA 12 years ago and that dominated that game in terms of possession and chances created. If it wasn't for Tim Howard with the most saves of all time in the World Cup, we really could have lost by a lot in that one. But what's very unfortunate is, and you guys have heard me talk about this on the show, Team USA has been building, right? And the reason I like this squad so much is because all of these guys were heartbroken in 2018, just like me and you, right? Anybody that supported Team USA throughout qualification over the last 8 years knows how embarrassing it was to go to Trinidad and Tobago needing a draw to make it into the World Cup, and you lose that game 2-1. And Christian Pulisic is crying. Clint Dempsey gets subbed off the field. He never represents Team USA again. That was the heartbreaking failure that you need as adversity. And those guys were all 17, 18, and 19 at that time. And some of them might not have even made the World Cup squad that year, but they were part of the qualification. I'm talking about Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna. All of these guys have been part of the organization that went through that heartbreak in 2018. And then in 2022, right, they rally around each other and the heartbreak and the failures of not making the World Cup, and they get through the group stage, and they put in a good effort against the Dutch, and they lose, I believe it was 3-1 to the Netherlands, and we just didn't have a striker. And it was so funny because that World Cup was played in the winter in Qatar, and in like January of 2023, the U.S. debuted a striker by the name of Fuller and Balogun. By way of Ivory Coast and England, he could have chose three different nations. He chose America. He chose the opportunity to start at striker, and because he felt like he did have the most American pride of all the nations that he had a chance to represent. And Balogun has been awesome. He's been part of this team since 2023, and he played with Berhalter in 2024 and earned his opportunity to start in this World Cup because of how great he was in France with Monaco, his club team. And I think there's some people that don't understand everything that Balogun did on the field. He was the perfect number nine for Team USA. As a striker, you got to score goals. He did that. As a striker, you got to hold up play and let other guys get down with you on counterattack options and opportunities. He did that. He would go out wide at times to make space in the middle for Christian Pulisic. He was great on crosses. He, in fact, actually had a cross, and you could give him an assist on the own goal against Australia. Our striker was playing better than anybody on our team. I will stand up on that. Fuller and Balogun, in my mind, is getting a 9 out of 10 for every game that he played in for Team USA, including this last one last night. I mean, it's going to be overlooked because of the red card, but he absolutely broke a Bosnian player's ankles on the step over in the box that he thought he earned a penalty kick on. He broke that dude's ankles. And then he had a goal. And then he had another goal that was called back because of offsides. He was terrific in the game. And then there's one moment where he's trying to do everything that a striker does, including get back defensively. And he's working defensively to try to steal the ball away. And he lunges at a tackle to try to make a play on the ball. It's complete incidental content. There are so many times in soccer where guys get upset and they lunge in studs up and they're deserving of a red card and they're deserving of a match suspension and they're deserving of a fine. That is the opposite of what Fowler and Balogun did. There was no intent for malice in that situation at all. He was trying to make a play on the ball. It's soccer. They call it football. He was making a play with his foot, and he stepped on another man's foot. That does not deserve a red card. I'm sorry. It's never deserving of a red card. If anything, it's a yellow card. It really should have been nothing play on because the ref didn't even see it. He said nothing play on. But now we've got VAR. We've got video assistant referee. And we're just trying to make soccer even more absurd and make it so Americans don't want to watch the sport even more because it just doesn't make sense. It makes zero sense at all. The VAR would step in this situation, and really, they are told not to take still images and slow-mo into account. And what did they do? They took the slow-mo and the still image into account and then told the referee to go to the video review monitor, and at that point, the referee is instructed if he sees studs coming down in a dangerous manner to give a red card. It should have never gotten to that moment. So at that moment, the ref had no choice but to look like an absolute idiot and give a red card. And it's just so frustrating because we should be celebrating. We should be happy. We should be talking about how in our 250th anniversary, we're going to celebrate through July 4th because we're going to play on July 6th. But now playing against Belgium without Fowler and Balogun, it's just so annoying. It dampers a huge victory, one of the biggest wins in U.S. men's national team history. Everybody wants to talk about the red card. Nobody wants to talk about us defending down to 10 men for the final 30 minutes, scoring a goal with 10 men. It's all about the red card. The red card has ruined this celebration, and there's nothing FIFA can do, apparently. I've heard two different sides to this. Oh, Team USA is going to be able to appeal. And then I've heard, well, there's no appeal process when it goes through VAR. We don't really know. There's fake news out there and misinformation. What I can tell you is this. Balogun got a red card in the game. He did not play the final 30 minutes, and it looks like he's not going to be able to play against Belgium. Let's take a listen to Fox rules analyst Mark Clattenburg breaking down the call.
Yeah, when I watched this in real speed, I didn't think it was much. I thought it was just a coming together of two players. And what you do see is that Balogun's challenge does catch his opponent on the back of the leg, and then when it comes down, it catches his ankle, and that's when the twist of the Bosnia-Herzegovina player's foot twists underneath him. The problem you've got is, to reach a criteria of the red card, it has to be some speed, there has to be some force, and there has to be some malice. This lacked that. But what it does have, which is what the element of the VAR is hiding behind, is it endangers the safety of the opponent because of that foot-on-foot challenge, which could have acted and ended with a broken ankle. So what they've done is they've looked at the consequence of the challenge. However, in my opinion, this didn't endanger the safety of the opponent. Balogun doesn't even look for the foul. It's one of them where it happens in a split second. He puts his foot down and catches the opponent. It was an accidental challenge. And for me, this did not reach the criteria of a red card, and it shouldn't have been a VAR intervention.
I love his breakdown there. And it's so frustrating that this is the Fox Rules analyst telling everybody in America that they got it wrong on the pitch, and now you're telling me also that we can't appeal this? So your expert that you hired is telling us you got it wrong, but you're not going to be able to review it and change it because we have 5 days until July 6th to get Balogun to free Balogun? Here's the one part that I agree with what he was saying. I don't care if there was malice or not. If the player's ankle was broken, you can tell me it's a red card. I saw that guy get up and walk away and then play the rest of the game. He didn't even sub out. Why do you think people in America hate soccer? Because people cry on the ground rolling around to try to get a red card, and the referee awarded Bosnia the red card. It's so frustrating. It's hard for FIFA to come back from this. I mean, they just ruined what was a really great World Cup in USA, Mexico, and Canada. There's no way that should have been a red card. There's no way that you should have gone to VAR, and it's unbelievable that I'm hearing reports that Team USA will not even be able to appeal this. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. The summer of soccer rolls on with three matches today: Spain, Austria, Portugal, Croatia, and then Switzerland, Algeria. We've got soccer here in Richmond. You can go see the Kickers tomorrow night at City Stadium. 7:30 is your kickoff, and we're going to give away three pair of tickets today on AWOD Radio to listeners of the show. We had Rob Ucrop in studio yesterday previewing Team USA against Bosnia. One of the things he talked about was got to get through the match with all 11 guys. Unfortunately, that was not the case due to Balogun's red card. But keep listening to 910 The Fan for your chance to win Kickers tickets later today for tomorrow night at City Stadium. Joining us right now, talk a little footy on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline from the Plus Money Podcast. It's Andrew Passaro. What's up, Andrew?
Not much. Just starting to get a little worried about next week. We have to play without Flo. So, you know,
yeah,
usual.
Before we move on to that game against Belgium, I do want to take a moment to discuss the success that Team USA had in this game. In particular, the final 30 minutes, down a man to put another one into the back of the net. Tillman's free kick, I mean, one of the best free kicks I've seen from a Team USA player in a long, long time. I mean, your thoughts on the second half, man?
I mean, look, they did what they needed to do. They got the game over the line. I've been pretty impressed with the defense and you know, a few of these games now. Two clean sheets at the tournament wasn't really what I was expecting. But, you know, look, this is a team, and we've seen this with Pochettino teams in the past, that, like, when they're unified and they're running hard, they're a really tough team to play against. And look, you know, for those who weren't watching, Bosnia, when they qualified for the World Cup, they played against an Italy team with 10 men. And Italy tried to play defense for the rest of the game while they had the lead, and they gave up the goal, and they lost some penalties. And the U.S. did exactly what they should have done, which is basically not really change what they were doing, still trying to get the chances when they could get them. They got that second goal, which was an incredible moment. And, you know, now we're playing in the round of 16, which I think to some extent was the expectation for this U.S. team playing all these games at home soil. And now, you know, you're going to have a great home field advantage in Seattle again when they play a Belgium side that I cannot seem to figure out.
You mentioned something that we absolutely need to celebrate, though. Team USA was in a very similar situation to the Italians, who went on to lose that and have their dream end, did not advance to make this World Cup. Team USA takes the different approach, pushes guys forward in times. You know, it wasn't the whole thing like an all-out attack, but they earned that free kick. Tillman scores, and now they're on to the round of 16, and I don't care about expectations. Germany's out. Uruguay didn't advance to the knockout round. Team USA, deservedly so, is one of the 16 best teams in this World Cup.
Yeah, I don't think that's surprising. I think I've kind of had the U.S. in my, like, 5 to 10 ranking, and it was really going to depend on who they matched up against in this game here to get into a quarterfinal. Like, I don't know. They're definitely the big surprise for me is the way that they're playing. Not really that they're getting results. You know, we've seen plenty of home teams that have hosted World Cups exceed expectations. Really happened in 2002 with South Korea. It's happened before that, you know, the fact that you're on your regular time zone, in climates that you're used to, playing in front of your home support, all of that stuff matters. It does impact things. I mean, look at the way that Mexico's playing right now through four games. They haven't given up a goal. They're going to play another game at the Azteca. And they have a real home field advantage on there, and it's starting to show that the U.S. has that as well. So I'm very happy with what we're getting out of the U.S. I would definitely say, you know, expectations they've met expectations. I think, you know, in terms of what we said ahead of the tournament, but with the way that they've played, they're exceeding expectations. They're making new fans. And I think that's such like a crucial thing for this team.
Andrew Passaro with us here on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline. Follow him on Twitter at Andrew Passaro and check out the Plus Money podcast for all of your bets for all things World Cup. He's been tracking everything. And, of course, during the season, he'll have EPL bets as well. And Andrew, you're locked in. You're betting with soccer. You're following this team. But let's just talk about from the casuals perspective, because like you mentioned, you have them like 5-10. Like I feel like the casuals still feel like Team USA is team 32 in the world, and that we all watch the failures of 2024 with Berhalter. And so, yes, you could say it's within expectations to get to the round of 16. I feel like based off of the last 3 years, this is way, way bigger than what a lot of the casual supporters expected.
I mean, look, I was concerned with the form going into this tournament. They played Belgium and they played Portugal in March in the last international break right before the tournament. And they got smashed by Belgium, like absolutely played off the park. They played Portugal. Portugal kind of played with their food and they got the result. They moved on. They actually played Senegal again leading up to this World Cup, and they got a win against that. I will say, it is very funny because in the last like calendar year, the U.S. has played almost every team that they've played in this World Cup in a friendly, which is credit to the guy. You know, I don't know how it happened, whether it was fixed or whatever, but it's like you look at all these. And the funny thing is, if they win and Portugal advance today and beat Spain, like you could be playing Portugal in the quarterfinal, which again, another team they've played in the last year. So that's it's very funny that the way that things have broken out. But yeah, I think again, it's not just that they're getting results, it's the way they're getting results, I think, is the impressive fact here. Like, we've seen this team get to the knockout stages before, but it's been, you know, oh, they got, you know, two draws and they won against the worst team in the group or whatever. But what Pochettino has done, I think he now has the most wins at a World Cup as a USA manager, which is crazy. They've won 3 games. You know what I mean? Like, the expectations for the men's team versus the women's team are vastly different. And again, they're getting results, but they're also playing an attractive style. And I think that's so, so big for the growth of the sport in this country, if you're somebody like me who enjoys watching it all the time.
Andrew, 3 games today, Spain, Austria, Portugal, Croatia, Switzerland, Algeria. According to the odds online, the favorites are Spain, Portugal, and Switzerland. But it feels like in the group stage, in the knockout rounds, you can always expect like one upset a day. If you were going to pick an upset today, who would it be and why?
I'm going to throw you a couple stats at you because you're right there. I think any of these teams are knockout, like essentially get knocked out. I was looking at the last few World Cups in the round of 16. Once we got to the knockout stage, 6 of 8 of these games went both teams to score in the last two tournaments. I think all these teams know, like, hey, we've got a chance, get this to knockouts, get it to penalties, anything's possible. That's what we saw happen with Paraguay against Germany, even though I didn't think Germany was that good ahead of this tournament. I hate to say it because I did bet on them to win the whole thing at 9-1, but what we have seen from Portugal has simply not been good enough. They have one of the greatest players of all time in Cristiano Ronaldo, but I don't think they're using him the right way. I don't know if that's an ego thing with Cristiano or if that's a coach management thing, but he's 41 years old and he's still running out there for 90 minutes. And that's crazy to me. I was at Croatia-Ghana in Philly over the weekend. This Croatia team, yes, they are also another team that is older, but they know their roles very well. They've got a lot of good role players. I wouldn't be shocked if that game is 1-1 and sends the extra time and then you're in a penalty shootout and anything is possible. And I think too, Spain, another team I bet on to get to the final, to win the whole thing. Spain have not really gotten out of like first gear. I don't really know my car terms well, but they have really not gotten going yet. And maybe now that we're into the knockouts, maybe this is where the breakout game happens. But this Austria team is pretty good. I don't think people realize that, you know, maybe they don't have a superstar on that roster, but they've got a lot of players that are playing around top flight teams in Europe. and they've got a very good manager that is going to get the best out of them. They're going to give Spain a tough time today, in my opinion. Spain should advance, but Austria wouldn't surprise me. Croatia certainly wouldn't surprise me. I think Switzerland, Algeria, low-key might be the best game of the day. I think, like, we saw the craziness with Algeria at the ending of their game against Austria last week. I wouldn't be surprised if that's like a 2-2, 3-3 type of game and it just kind of turns into a shootout, because there's a lot of talent on the Algeria side as well.
Friday, Australia, Egypt. Egypt's favored. Argentina, Cape Verde. Argentina's favored heavily. Colombia, Ghana. Colombia's favored. Would you predict an upset on Friday?
Australia, Egypt, I think is a bit of a coin flip. I actually wouldn't be surprised if Australia did it. I think that game's going to be a really tough watch. Argentina, Cape Verde, I think this is where the bubble pops and the clock strikes midnight for Cinderella. I know that they've frustrated a lot of teams with their defense. I just think there's maybe a slight chance with this Cape Verde team that they're a little starstruck being on the field with Messi. And also, like, if there's any team that can break down a low block, it's a team with Lionel Messi. And then Colombia, Ghana, I don't know. I think this Friday slate is actually a really tough day. I was just doing my podcast this morning, episode will be out in a little bit. But really tough day to find action. I think we'll have fun with these games because it's a World Cup, but I really don't think it's the best games, group of games. Colombia should beat Ghana, but I think Ghana will give them a tough time. I wouldn't be shocked if that game went to extra time. I would say of all of the teams that could maybe pull off the upset, it's probably Ghana. Maybe Australia is an underdog, but I really don't think they deserve to be.
The Plus Money Podcast, the Plus Money Pod on Twitter, your home for the best bets throughout the rest of this summer of soccer. Best bets in 15 minutes or less. Andrew, got to tell you my plan before I let you go. Hopefully you can give me some advice. You mentioned you were there in Philly. I'm going to Philly Saturday, July 4th. I have a VIP ticket to the party that's like outside of the stadium at Xfinity Live. I don't have a ticket to the game. Is there any chance that somebody's going to sell AWOD a ticket right before kickoff?
I mean, it depends on how much money you want to drop, because I think these French fans are starting to believe, man. And also, I mean, Paraguay, they hadn't been in a tournament, I think, in 20 years. So I don't know if a Paraguayan fan is gonna let that go. But, depending on how many ads you can sell between now and then, you might need like a four-finger sum to get your hands on a ticket. But I will say I had a great time in Philly. Walked right into the stadium, no issues. There's tons of bars right out there, and everybody was kind of up there for all the games. City felt, I felt like it was a really good spot for a game. I had a great time up there. But yeah, I think getting into that game is going to be pretty tough with France are absolutely cooking. They've scored, two or more goals in 8 of their last 10 games. Michael Olise is doing just as much damage as Kylian Mbappe. And I mean, the way that France has looked, I think it's going to be really hard for anybody to stop them based on, I think France and Argentina are, I know that was the last World Cup final, but right now with the way that all the teams have played, it's hard not to see the two of them matching up again in a final, which I think would be an incredible watch again.
Absolutely. Andrew, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Anytime, brother. Enjoy Philly.
You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, now at 105.1 FM. So NBA free agency is so dead, but that does not mean that the trade market isn't heating up. And it was wild to see the trade that happened inside of the Eastern Conference yesterday between two rival teams against each other with some big name heavy hitter players involved. Let's do the fast break with AWOD, all things NBA.
Let's go. Let's play some basketball here.
We're going on a fast break with AWOD. From buzzer-beating shots to the best highlight plays from around the league, every clutch moment.
Stroking it from three.
The all-stars of the league. We're out in transition. It's a breakaway.
It's good at the buzzer.
It's the fast break and AWOD talking all things NBA.
All right, so let's rewind for a second on Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown goes to Cal. Jaylen Brown is selected by the Boston Celtics. There were upset Celtics fans on draft night when they drafted Jaylen Brown. But then he wanted to go out there and ball out. And his second year, he was in Defensive Player of the Year conversations. And then a couple years later, he was an All-Star. And then in 2022... the Celtics lost the NBA Finals to Golden State Warriors, and it felt like Jaylen Brown was exposed. And that's when there became a national conversation about him being one-handed, right? No left hand. Am I making this up? You guys behind the glass remember this, right? Like, the conversation was Jaylen Brown has no left hand. We're blaming him for the Celtics losing the NBA Finals.
Absolutely. Am I right? Absolutely. That was a big conversation. He's got no left. How is he going to be anything in the NBA?
And then he would work and grind and get better and get better and better. And he would improve his points per game, his rebounds per game, his assists per game to all-time highs. And then led his Celtics to a championship and was named the finals MVP. Not Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown, finals MVP. But that didn't sit right with Boston Celtics fans. Because he was not the leader of the team in the locker room. That's Jason Tatum. So now you fast forward one more year after that, and he has his best statistical season of all time. He's in MVP conversations with 29 points per game, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. It is the best season of his life. The Celtics have a ton of success without Jason Tatum, the guy that they want to be the star, the guy that the NBA wants to be one of the faces of the league. And when the Celtics were eliminated, Jaylen Brown went on a rant saying that it was the most fun he's ever had. Yeah, but how does that make Celtics fans feel? How does that make the Celtics organization feel when they are building everything around Jason Tatum? And so that's when I believe there was a issue in Boston for Jaylen Brown. And then we had seen some rumors. Portland, heavily interested in Jaylen Brown. Dallas, I saw, interested in Jaylen Brown. Maybe the Lakers interested. Well, yesterday a trade happens, but nobody that I know expected Jaylen Brown to go from Boston to Philadelphia. Wild, wild decision to trade inside of the Eastern Conference to the team that just knocked you out of the playoffs this past year. What does this say about the Celtics organization? I think it says, get the F out of here, Jaylen Brown. We didn't need you, and we didn't need your distractions, and we're going to move on from you. I mean, am I crazy, or did you guys also see a report that they believe that Peyton Pritchard's going to make the kind of leap that Jaylen Brown met? The Celtics hate Jaylen Brown. It's crazy.
I don't know if it's hatred, but I feel like that was a relationship between the team and Jaylen Brown that just wasn't able to be repaired. He'd been in trade rumors for Kevin Durant, and that understandably ticked him off, right? Then he was in trade rumors with Giannis this offseason, and apparently those were being pushed really heavily around the Boston organization. That also would tick him off. A guy that's coming off of his best season and Boston saying, we're trying to ship you out of here. I don't know how you as a player, even if you don't have a huge ego, don't take that as an offense. They don't want me here. I'm the finals MVP. I'm the guy that got us over the hump finally. We broke that curse.
So you think Jaylen Brown pushed his way out of Boston?
That's my read on the situation. I feel like it was less the Celtics forcing him out and more Jaylen Brown not wanting to be there. And if you have a guy like Jaylen Brown who doesn't want to be there, that is as good as he is in MVP conversations last year, you've got to get something from him. I just don't know if they got enough.
No, they didn't get enough. I mean, there's just nobody that thinks they got enough. I would love to hear from an NBA insider or even a fan that has the opinion that the Celtics got enough back for a finals MVP in Jaylen Brown. Let's go through all the players that they had discussed trading Jaylen Brown for. You mentioned a few of them. Giannis is the first one, right? Like, Giannis versus Jaylen Brown. That makes sense. We can have that argument behind the scenes. Who's better, Giannis versus Jaylen Brown? I think that's a fun argument. Jaylen Brown versus Paul George? It's not 2016 anymore. Who else did they try to trade Jaylen Brown for?
They tried to trade him for Kevin Durant when he was on the Nets.
Right.
Which, again, at that time, what would you say? What was that, 2020-ish Kevin Durant for Jaylen Brown at the time? I don't know what side of the aisle you'd be on in that one.
I mean, even today, Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant is a much better conversation than Paul George. Like, Paul George has been traded away more than the Sisterhood of Traveling Pants. I mean, it's crazy how many teams he's played for. Paul George, I'm kind of a Paul George fan, but Indiana shipped him out. Then Oklahoma City shipped him out. Then the Clippers have shipped him out. And now Philadelphia is sending him to Boston. I mean, look, he's a 9-time All-Star. Like, we cannot make fun of Paul George, but he also went through a horrific injury, all right, bounced back, and is entering his 17th season in the NBA. So this is not a young star. And I don't care what he did this past season for Philadelphia. Like, I thought he was decent in the playoffs for Philadelphia, but I don't think you're getting anywhere near that player moving forward. Like, Paul George's career is on the back end here. It's a very interesting trade from the Boston perspective. Like you said, it was almost like, Jaylen Brown, you're such a headache. Like, we're better without you. It's almost like they said, look at what we did this year without Jason Tatum. We can do that without Jaylen Brown.
And there's reason to believe that they can. You look at the on-off numbers with Jaylen Brown. The Celtics, they're a really solid team even without it. You have a healthy Jason Tatum. I don't think it's that crazy to think that if Jaylen Brown was the one that was hurt all of last season, that the Celtics could not have done what they did with Jason Tatum instead. It's not an insane theory, but it also, replacing him with Paul George definitely makes them worse, not just in the short term, but in the long term as well. You lose out on 5 more years of an elite player in Jaylen Brown.
Yeah. Here's my final take on this. Brad Stevens is not stupid. He's actually one of the smartest general managers and presidents in basketball right now. The Celtics aren't done yet because this looks bad for them. It looks terrible. They lost the trade. They know they lost the trade. Free agency still open. I mean, somehow if they got LeBron, then all of a sudden we're having a way different conversation about Boston. If they kind of swung a trade for somebody else, we might have a different conversation. But here's what I will say about this. The regular season is way different than the playoffs. You can tell me Boston is first place in the Atlantic Division. You could tell me Boston next year is first place in the Eastern Conference. They are not winning the title next year with this group that they have. The reason they won the title was because they had Tatum and Brown. They need those guys together to win a title. They do not have what it takes to win a title with this current roster.
Yeah, I agree. Paul George has not risen up in the playoffs. We've seen playoff P, right? It hasn't been there ever since really the Clippers days, ever since the days with the Pacers, he hasn't been that playoff performer. It's something to keep an eye on. I think they definitely took a step back, but it's a weaker East. If they get hot, if they get the right path, I won't say it's impossible for them to come out of it.
No, and here's the other thing, all right, it's because I do think that they will have regular season success. I'm still blown away by the success they had last year without Jason Tatum, and you got to give Mazzulla credit. He should have been coach of the year if he wasn't. Jason Tatum has the ability to do what Jaylen Brown did this past year. He can go out and score 30 a game, and that will be interesting to see if he can lift his team in the postseason because he has not done that yet. Jaylen Brown won finals MVP. Jason Tatum's been great in the playoffs before, but the year they won it all, Jaylen Brown lifted his team more than Jason Tatum did. I still love Jason Tatum. I do want him to be one of the faces of the league. The kid from Duke, he's American. I really do like his game. He reminds me a little bit of Kobe Bryant. I do want Anthony Edwards also to be the face of the West. I like Americans to dominate the NBA, so I'm rooting for Jason Tatum to have a much more productive season now, fully removed from that injury. I wonder if he can reach those levels to be able to lift Boston to an NBA championship. But the East is wide open, and I would put Philadelphia ahead of Boston with the two rosters put together right now. You're listening to AWOD here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan, not 105. 109. Welcome back. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio here on the new Sports Radio 910 The Fan. Now at 105.1 FM, that was the call, the three-run shot, and a 10-2 victory for the Nats, who win a series, now have won two series in a row on the road. They continue to be one of the best teams in baseball on the road. But coming up next for the Washington Nationals will be a chance for Nats fans to see them taking on the Pirates. And that will be tomorrow to start off a three-game series that, of course, includes a July 4th, 11 o'clock first pitch on America's 250th birthday against the Pirates, Game 3 Sunday at 1 o'clock. Joining us right now on the Hadid Mercer Rug Cleaning Hotline from Masson, Bobby Blanco. What's up, Bobby?
What's up, A-Watt? How you beating this heat before the holiday weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. And I've chosen this month and last month to start running every morning. It's been a terrible mistake. I'm always drenched in sweat. I feel like I've taken 100 showers a day. But I'm feeling better, and the Nats are playing good baseball. But before we get into everything, can you kind of catch us up on everything? Cade Cavalli and the bench is clearing against the Red Sox. I've been so caught up in World Cup fever and the NBA free agency. Give us a little bit about what happened there and really what Toboni and Butera said about the situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to this. I'm glad we're talking about it, even though it was a couple of days ago at this point. But, yeah, look, I mean, we could spend the whole segment talking about this because, like I said, there's a lot to it. I'll try to be brief. But, you know, for those who don't know, I think – first and foremost, we need to address that Wilson Contreras, the first baseman for the Red Sox, has this history. I mean, he has a reputation around baseball for kind of being a troublemaker. You can do a quick Google search, and you will find that he's been involved in bench-clearing incidences, like I think it's like double-digit times over the past couple of years. This is already his third that he's been involved this year, and second in the past week. So this guy already has come in with his reputation of being an instigator, kind of being a problem when it comes to all this off-field stuff or things not related to the game. Now, it's also important to notice that he is Venezuelan, and obviously Venezuelans are going through a very difficult time right now with the earthquakes that just hit their home country last week. He has spoken outwardly about how much it has affected him. He has friends and family back home that have been affected by this. So he's going through a very emotional time. We saw as much Monday night when he hit that three-run bomb. He chucked his bat in the air, screamed Venezuela, and then took his time running the bases. There were shots of him back in the dugout, crying, being comforted by teammates, all that stuff. So all those things can be true. He's kind of a knucklehead, but he's going through an emotional time right now, and my heart goes out to him, all Venezuelans, and the country itself. For what they're going through. Now, well, as it relates to Cade Cavalli, I think it's also, for those who don't know, I mean, Cade Cavalli struck him out in the bottom of the fourth with a beautiful pitch and shouted out, you know, sit down, boy, which we'll talk about in a second. And then Wilson Contreras then proceeded to charge the mound, throw his batting helmet at his direction, actually hit his fellow countryman, Andres Chaparro, started this whole brawl, what have you. But it really starts back in the first inning Tuesday night when Wilson Contreras was on second base. There's a fly out to left to end the inning. As Contreras is rounding third, he's got to go back to the first base dugout. Cade Cavalli has to come back to the third base dugout. There's an overhead shot of the entire field, an all 22, if you will, your colleague up here in D.C., Grant Paulson with 106.7 The Fan, tweeted out. You can see Wilson Contreras go down the third baseline as if he's going back to the dugout, look up, and then immediately make a 90-degree turn and intentionally go and brush past Cade Cavalli. No one does that, right? That's just not a thing that happens in baseball. He deliberately changes his angle to go brush by him. And as if to try to get under his skin, kind of rub him the wrong way, Cade Cavalli stops, lets him do it, kind of looks at him, is like, what was that, man? And then continues on his business. After the game, Contreras said he apologized. It was an accident. I'm sure it was an accident. When you can see you change your direction, go straight to him. And then the apology is he took five steps, reaches, then he stopped. Then he, as he continues running away, puts his hand out, half-heartedly turns his head, doesn't even pass his shoulders, as if to say, this is my apology. I know I'm on camera. I need to make it look like I apologize. When you bump into somebody on the street, Awad, do you wait until you've already passed him for five more steps before you apologize? Probably not. You probably stop immediately and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. My bad. You know, let's continue on our way. So that's how this whole thing, those are all the, I think, important context to what happened. Now, I will say, Kay Cavalli, poor choice of words. Probably should not have said sit down, boy. Myself, personally, knowing Kay Cavalli over these past couple of years, that's just how people in, you know, around baseball talk. There was no racially charged, you know, connotation behind it. You know, I've heard him say that to Jake Irvin. I've heard him say that to other players in the clubhouse. I've heard him say it in a positive way, like, attaboy, like, way to go, boy. Like, you know, it's just the word boy, I know, has a racial connotation when used in a certain instance and to a certain demographic. That was not the case here. And Wilson Contreras was even asked after the game, did you feel like what he said was a racially charged word, term to you? And he said, no, like, I'm Venezuelan. That means nothing to me. Like, so Cavalli could have said anything. He could have said, yippity-doo-dah, and Wilson Contreras still would have charged them out. So all that to say is, you know, it was an unfortunate incident for Cade because he pitched the game of his life Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Seven innings, one unearned run, no walks, 13 strikeouts, no hit or one hit, and it was in the first inning. But I will say, I think Cade has handled it, and the Nationals have handled this with the utmost professionalism. He addressed everything after the game. He even came back yesterday morning because he saw online people were saying, he's a racist. He, you know, he should be kicked out. He should be suspended. And he took that to heart and felt bad that he went out of his way to call the media back over Wednesday morning and apologize and say, I've had discussions with Paul Tivone. I've had discussions with my manager, Blake Butera. That is not what I meant at all. And I think it was very well shown that that's not what he meant because it wasn't even a thought by anybody in that clubhouse after the game. And then when they saw the reaction online when they got back to the team hotel is when they're like, oh, my gosh, like, this is what people are saying. That's not the case at all. We should clarify this tomorrow morning. So I tip my cap to Cade and the Nationals for addressing this. I tip my cap to Paul Tivone because not often do you see a head of front office, you know, come out of his way to speak on something like this. I, you know, for everything that I love about Mike Rizzo, I just don't think this is what, that's something he would address, you know, personally, if he were still the man in charge. But I tip my cap to all of them. And you know what? Quite frankly, like, again, this is something we come to expect from Wilson Contreras. He's kind of a knucklehead. And I haven't heard him say anything else afterwards. So, like, why is he not – like, why did – you know, why is the guy who's 10 years younger than you acting more mature about this than the guy who's almost 34 and, you know, is a really good player, by the way, for the Red Sox. But, you know, we've just come to expect this from Wilson Contreras at this point. His act is tired. I'm glad that the Nationals don't have to face him again the rest of the season. I feel bad for anybody who's in his division. I feel bad for his teammates because they have to keep asking and speaking on his behalf because he keeps acting like this.
Yeah, I mean, social media is a cesspool. It's a place for disaster and terrible things. And it's just frustrating, I guess, that this has been blown up on social media, massively taken out of proportion when – really, it should be about this team winning two series in a row. They're 45-43. How important are these next nine games, all of them at home?
Very important before the All-Star break. But let's just look back to last week when we talked. You know, the Nationals had just dropped 3 of 4 to the Phillies at home. All three of those losses came via bullpen collapses late in the game. And, you know, they should have swept the Phillies. And then, you know, we're having a completely different conversation this week. But for them to bounce back after losing those games the way they did, and then also, mind you, they lost the first game to the Orioles in Baltimore on Friday night, I think in a similar fashion via a late collapse of the bullpen. So they had lost 4 in a row, and they come back, win 2 more in Baltimore. They lose a tough game Monday night at Fenway. They come back and blow out the Red Sox in back-to-back games, 8-1, 10-1. It was just 10-2, so excuse me. It is an impressive response by this team, considering the way that last week went, to then win 4 out of 6 on this road trip to two ALS teams that are supposedly in this playoff race, and they're not. Those are teams that have probably on paper have better rosters than this Nationals team, and they were able to win both series. So now looking ahead, you have 3 games against the Pirates, like you said. You're not going to face Paul Skeens this weekend because he just pitched yesterday. So luckily, you avoid, you know, one of the best pitchers in baseball and hopefully can win two of three. Ideally, that would be great to win on the 4th of July because that's such a great tradition of them playing at 11 a.m. on the 4th of July. You have the Astros coming in next week and then the Yankees right before the All-Star break. So a tough slate coming up for this team. And again, like you mentioned, again, at the top of the hit, like they don't play very well at home. This would be a perfect time for them to change that narrative, win all of these series, win a handful of games, and carry some momentum as the All-Star break.
Bobby, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, anytime, Awa. Thanks. Enjoy the weekend. Everyone stay safe and stay cool, and happy 4th.
Yep, that's Bobby Blanco. Check out his work covering the Washington Nationals, massinsports.com. I'm Adam Epstein. You're listening to AWOD Radio on The Fan.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.